Well, I'm joined now by Cos Samaras, a former Labor Party strategist turned pollster, and Dr. Emily Foley, a political scientist at the University of Canberra and Flinders University, to help me get a sense of who the political influences are at either end of the spectrum in Australia. Cos and Emily, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Emily, who, following on from that rather dramatic account of what's happening elsewhere, who are the prime Gen Z political influences here? Where do they sit, would you say, on the political spectrum?
Freya Leach has really, I guess, is claiming the space of the right-wing political influencer in Australia in particular. She's slowly starting to kind of gather a larger following, certainly more on TikTok. I think she's got about 121,000 followers on TikTok. But more importantly, with her, some of her posts are gaining traction, you know, sometimes up to a million views when it comes to particular political issues. And then I guess this year, particularly with the sort of the influencer election, what we saw on the left side of politics, I guess more prominently in terms of Hannah Ferguson and her Cheek Media company, but also, you know, one would say Abby Chatfield, although they're two very different sort of political influences, I'd say.
Well, Hannah's 26 and Abby's 30. And she, I mean, Abby's a reality TV star, isn't she, really, and a radio and TV presenter and now a social media influencer, whereas Hannah is more of a media product, isn't she, if I can put it like that. She doesn't mind me speaking about her like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, Hannah has called herself, that she likes to be referred to in her press club talk, a political commentator. But you're right, she's built an entire sort of progressive media company, kind of trying to challenge the mainstream media. Whereas, yes, Abby Chatfield speaks on a wide range of issues, and particularly around election periods, becomes a lot more active, or, you know, even the US election, for example.
Right. Now, we did mention Freya Leach at the start, the 23-year-old influencer, and she's speaking this month at a Liberal Party fundraiser. What is she actually saying? Like, is there a through line in her content?
I think there is. I think there's quite a clear through line, and particularly if you're watching the sort of US politics, you know, the folks that were becoming quite notorious over the last few years. There was Charlie Kirk and others, for example, that sort of Sky News kind of ringing true. She'll post regularly about particular, you know, conservative right-wing issues. I guess the through line is the fact that most of her content either is there to sort of rage people, which is quite obviously a popular way in which to gain traction, both in terms of the algorithm and on your post, but amongst that generation. So it's a sort of a creating rage over issues to do with feminism or First Nations issues, or to particularly around Gaza. And then also just pursuing those sort of traditional quite conservative right-wing politics, things around being anti-women going out into the workforce a little bit more, or potentially just opening space for women to choose to stay at home if they want to.
Okay. Now, Cos, given that social media is playing such a role here, and it's sort of almost a lot of what comes out is unashamed in its bias, do you think it is affecting the political allegiances of young Australians and how they intend to vote?
I think we can use Freya Leach as a really good example of answering that question. That is, the answer is probably no. The surveys that we've conducted across the country now for some time indicates that Generation Z, which is obviously the generation she very much belongs to, is drastically shifting to the left.
Right.
The coalition vote amongst Generation Z Australians is in the low teens. For women, it's probably hovering around the single digits, particularly in our large cities. So she may turn up to a Liberal or coalition fundraiser, but I guarantee you in that room, the majority are going to be baby boomers, which is effectively the cohort that the coalition now secures. And more importantly, the sort of politics that will find, the sort of people that will find Freya Leach's politics more attractive. The flip side to that, about 45% of Gen Z women in this country, doesn't matter where they live, are voting Green at the moment.
55%, did you say?
45%. 45%. Are voting Green. Biggest and most drastic shift of politics in this country I've seen as a researcher.
Why?
Yes, well, the good news, if you're on the progressive side of politics, is that the young people are showing the same sort of frustration that we're seeing across the world, and that is Generation Z has a sense that the political establishment has let them down on a number of issues, obviously housing in this country, and, of course, climate change for many of them as well. But their reaction to that is to move to the left. Now, the reasons for that and why they are different to other to the US and the UK are many, and you could write a book about it. There is actually significant differences between the way our young people are looking at politics versus those in the US.
Well, give it a go. Maybe you should write a book about this, cause
that's right.
What's the prime reason? Because that's a remarkable difference, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Look, we are much more urbanised country, so we know that young people living in regional areas in the US and outside of London in the UK are generally going to be more influenced by the communities in which they grow up in, although we are talking about a very globalist generation here. Borders don't always matter. The economic situation is just a lot more dire in some of these regional areas in these other two countries that I've just mentioned versus here. And there's just, I think, a compulsory voting system also helps. Cool. We've got to remember that a lot of young people in the UK and the US who generally may sit in the centre don't actually vote in those two countries.
What's your take on this, Emily?
Well, I was just going to pick up on that last thread. It's something that I've certainly been thinking about, something that I've noticed. This is particularly around the compulsory voting. If we're looking at the sort of role of these political influences, I guess, one important factor I've noticed is that in a lot of other countries, say Indonesia, for example, where there's a lot of sort of political influences with Gen Z, they're seeking to mobilise people, young people in particular, to go out and vote, whereas that's not necessary for these political influences here. So instead, what you've got are groups of young influencers or prolific women in particular on TikTok who are telling you who to vote for. So in the case of Abby Chatfield, she was voting for the Greens. So it was bringing Adam Bandt onto a podcast. Hannah Ferguson was more of sort of a teal, independent, aligned, let's say, whereas Freya was telling you to go out and vote for the Liberals. So I think the compulsory voting factor combined with we've got this, you know, complete lack of trust in traditional political institutions. Intifa Chowdhury writes on this a little bit more, that millennials are a bit more loyal to the two-party system, whereas Gen Z are far more willing to depart from that.
That's correct.
Cos, have we reached peak social media? I mean, I ask that because there's some research to suggest, I mean, you know, Adam Tooze, the intellectual who writes so much, I don't know how on earth he sleeps, to suggest that social media use is actually declining. Really?
Yeah, amongst Generation Alpha that's coming up through the ranks at the moment, we're watching these very carefully. We're seeing in our own work a drop-off of younger Australians, that is those I would say still very much in their teens, early teens even, not using these platforms. So I know the political class is, you know, to a certain extent, rightfully concerned about the role of social media and the impact on our children. But they are generally just jumping off. They're using more peer-to-peer applications. They are communicating.
But that's a sort of an even smaller echo chamber then, is it?
That's right. Well, it is and it isn't. It's more back to sort of normal social interaction where you only are talking to people that you know or that you want to know. They're less likely to want to project their own lifestyle onto social media. They're probably looking at their older counterparts and seeing some of the consequences of that. And so we are seeing definitely a drop-off. Adam Tooze is absolutely right.
And final word to you, Emily. Can you see, as people move out of, say, the Gen Z category and they have to start, I don't know whether they even can think about mortgages, but, you know, partnering and so on, can you see a sort of implicit shift in them? As you say, they've got all these energies, actually are engaged in quite interesting ways.
I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, like in terms of what we've seen with some of the voter data from this year, the millennial kind of group. So I'm a younger millennial, I like to say. I'm sort of right on the cusp, but there's still this allegiance to this two-party system, and perhaps that is because there's more of a anxieties to do with rental pressures, and I guess this kind of tradition of the two-party system. I think, you know, I think that it's sort of up in the air. I think it's really a matter of political actors and political institutions really seeking to retain that trust amongst Generation Z.
Very interesting to you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
Thanks for having me.
Cos Samaras, a strategist turned pollster, and Emily Foley, a political scientist at the University of Canberra and Flinders University.